Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. In the Olympian tradition, Elysium is the highest heaven the human mind can conceive. Join Hercules on his latest and greatest quest, making the life we live and the earth we share a paradise for all.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Tonight, on the Elysium Project, I am very proud to present Alumni in Recovery with Nancy Laboff and Kathy Sheehan O'Leary. Greetings and welcome, ladies. How are you today? Is Nancy and Kathy with us, or who is with us here on the show today?
Right now, it's me, Melissa, and my father, Chris.
Okay, I guess you can start. I'll be here if you need me for anything.
Okay. Yeah, I guess Nancy's going to hop on later, hopefully. But thank you so much, Hercules, for having us, for inviting us on your show tonight. This is a pleasure, absolute pleasure.
And you were awesome last time. You were very open. You were very honest. You spoke very powerfully and right to the heart. So I have no doubt that today will be along those lines as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. So for those of you that haven't heard me before, my name is Melissa, and I am a young woman in long-term recovery from substance abuse. And right now, my clean date, that means is that for the last almost three years, I have not had any mood or mind-altering substances, so no drugs, no alcohol, nothing in that time. And I consider myself in recovery. So what that means is if we look at the word recovery, it's healing. So I am healing from my substance abuse disorder. I'm still human. I can still live about my life as like a normal human being. I can go to weddings. I can go to parties. I am just like everybody else. I just can't have any mood or mind-altering substances in my body because I get, I'm allergic to them, as I like to say. And my brain works in an obsessive way where when I start to have those, they are all I can think about. I become obsessed with them. And unfortunately, my mind becomes altered and unclear, and I make not so nice decisions, and my life becomes unmanageable over time. So I live a better life, sober and clean, in a life of long-term recovery, and that's okay. Joining me today, I actually have my father on the line, and we're going to have a discussion about what it's like having a daughter in recovery from, like, the parents' point of view, and also the kids' point of view, my point of view. So I started drinking at a young age. I was 13, and I'm pretty sure my parents had no idea. I don't blame my parents at all for any of my choices. Just want to make that clear. My parents were always trying to do what's best for me, and not once did I ever doubt that they love me. And I hope that they're proud of me today. Right, Dad?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Pretty much so.
Yeah. So, Dad, you're like my number one supporter for my recovery, you know, and I'm so appreciative of that and so grateful, because I know a lot of people position don't have that relationship with their parents. How does it honestly make you feel knowing that your daughter is in this position?
I'm always very happy. I mean, I can give a little background about myself.
Go ahead.
I'm familiar with recovery because I'm someone who came into recovery at the age of 26. And so before Melissa was born, I was living the lifestyle of no mood altering drugs or alcohol for many years, and continue to live that way today. I did have a little blip in there where I thought maybe I should get out after 21 years, just to make sure that I can't successfully drink, and I had that proven to me in about a year and a half, proved it to myself, that I'm, like Melissa described it, obsessive once I ingest anything, whether it's alcohol or cigarettes or anything. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to obsess over. So for me, with a lot of time, when I say time, I mean literally time spent with people in recovery, it was very good to see Melissa, to see her continuing and staying in recovery. I was unaware that Melissa was drinking. I lived 2 hours away, and it was just a shock to me when it first started. I remember I was driving and she called me and said she had to go to a rehab. And I was like, what? This was like a total shock. But it's years later and things are, working out, and, she's seems to have an understanding, or is learning an understanding of how to place the self recovery and the things that she needs to do to make sure her recovery, and her, whether we're talking about physical or spiritual or mental recovery, there's certain things she has to prioritize and put in her life. And that's what I've learned, is that I'm responsible for my recovery. I'm responsible for what I need to do to stay in recovery. And Melissa's figuring that out. It's really good to see that.
asking, you know what memory popped into my head, Dad? I don't know if you remember this, but it's a key part of my recovery process. So back in 2015, I had unfortunately lost the guy that I was dating had taken his own life. And it was mid-relationship. And I was very young to experience that trauma. And I was having a lot of trouble sleeping because anytime I would fall asleep, I would just have these nightmares. And that was at the time, like the first time I ever tried to get sober. And so I remember, even though my dad lives far away from me, you know, we still called each other and texted each other. And I just remember it being, I think it was like 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. texted him saying something like, hey, I'm having a bad night. And immediately, minutes later, he calls me up and we were on the phone for hours. And I just, we were talking about grief and about life and about me and whatnot. And he was on the phone until I was able to calm down and go to sleep. And it meant so much to me because, like, looking back, you know, knowing that I have that support, a lot of kids don't. They're afraid to go to their parents. They're afraid to talk to their mom and dad. But meanwhile, like, I have a mother who is extremely supportive and loving, and she knows that she can't control my decisions, but she definitely gives me a lot of advice to help me make better decisions. And to have a father that's there and that's been there, he's been in my shoes just at a different time period, you know, like, I'm very grateful. And that's just something that I just always remember and think about, you know. Is there, so I have a question for you. Was there ever a time that you truly felt disappointed in me? Whether it was like hearing my story or something like, you know, that you feel comfortable sharing tonight.
No, I don't. Yeah, there's always
I'm
little
putting
things.
You on the spot.
Yeah, there may be little things where, you know, somebody who's young doesn't always say the right thing in a public situation like a wedding or something like that. But in general, you know, I don't have anything negative to say or disappointment in terms of what you're doing. You know, you're working through, you know, growing up, and a lot of people who suffer from abuse, you know, substance abuse issues, they don't realize that their emotional growth or their spiritual growth is kind of like put on pause while they're going through their addiction. And then when they come into the program, they may be 26 years old in years, but if they've been, you know, had their spiritual and emotional growth paused for 7 or 10 years, then they're not going to be a mature adult as much as somebody who wasn't affected by trauma or abuse or something. And it takes some time to work through learning, you know, how and when to act a certain way or say something or make a decision like you talked about in the beginning, learning how to make the right decision in the moment. That's something we have to always think about. We're not always perfect, but the only thing we've got to kind of get perfect is not to pick up that drink or drug at that moment in time and just put it off for a little while. But that can occur. We could be talking about food, Myself, you know, right now at my age, I have to start watching my physical body more. And, you know, I'm on the DASH diet, and it's not fun. I'd much rather be eating hamburgers, but change my diet to suit my body the way it is right now. And I got to accept that. But the action part of it is I got to get up every morning early and exercise. And I have to learn to say no to the foods that my body is not agreeing with at this point in time, like salt.
I have, you know, I have a very addictive personality myself, so if it's not, you know, I have to be careful because I'll find myself hyper-fixating on something like video games or work or food, and I will not realize the time that I'm spending on that, and I have to be very mindful of my daily activities and prioritize my schedule out, because sometimes even though I'm clean and sober, you know, I do still have that addictive personality. So if it's not one thing, it might be another. And that's something that I'm always mindful about, especially now with 3 years. One thing I want to point out, too, is because I get when I speak with alumni in recovery at the schools, I always get asked about my parents and like, did they know? How did I hide it from them? Like, why didn't I go to them? And, you know, when you're a kid, when you're like 14 years old, you're still developing your brain, and if you introduce these hard substances like alcohol and marijuana and cocaine and whatnot, you are altering your brain's development and your hormones and your growth. And so, you know, I at the time, I felt like I was invincible. I felt like literally the top of the world, like nobody else understood me. And I know I'm not, I know that I, like today, that I'm certainly not the only person in the world that has dealt with trauma. But in that moment at 14 years old, I had that mindset of invincibility. And, you know, the drugs and the alcohol certainly did not help that mindset. And when it comes to addiction and this disorder, you have to want it yourself. It's very difficult to force somebody, regardless of their age or their family life. They have to want to recover. They have to want to accept the help. And unfortunately, when I was a kid, I was very good at hiding things. I was very good at lying. You know, I don't know if you remember Dad, but it was Father's Day weekend, and me and my sisters came up to visit you, and I told you that I had to go to summer school. That was fun. Yep. You know, and because I didn't realize care in that moment, you know. Looking back, that was a weekend that was supposed to be catered to you know, to Dad, to celebrating fathers. And I kind of took that away, you know, because I was so focused on partying and socializing and everything that I didn't, you know, my grades slipped, and it's a consequence of my addiction as a youth. And, you know, I think about that a lot, especially when I reflect on my old ways and who I used to be. And I give my dad and my mom both, like, a lot of credit, because I was not an easy child to raise. you know, if it, if it wasn't one thing, it was another. Said earlier, I was very manipulative. I would lie. I was very sneaky. So, yeah. So my question to you, Dad, would be, what advice would you give to parents out there that feel that their child might be in danger of falling down a bad path or struggling in some way? Like, how would you suggest that they help from a parent's point of view?
Just so everybody understands out there, I have 5 daughters. So Melissa is number 3. So I've had a fair amount of experience dealing with daughters, at any rate. I think everybody goes, all people, not just children, go through stages as they grow up, and things can happen where people will want to isolate, and you've got to kind of break through that to show that you care and that you're trying to do what's best for them. Sometimes that involves, for my case, in one case, not with Melissa, but with someone else, that I had to be kind of the disciplinarian and be louder than some people would have liked. But that led to, you know, an understanding of, okay, we have to fix something together. And that's kind of the idea, is that, you know, the community of the family can work together to fix something, and be supportive of each other, so that whoever's got the problem can period, you need to get better. People don't get better overnight, no matter what the issue is. When it's an addiction issue or an emotional issue or a mental issue, it takes time to heal and to learn, you know, that you are loved by your family. And you have to show that. You have to work at showing that and make changes so that people, you know, the child understands that, you know, I'm loved here, and this is really, we're trying to do what's best, you know. Sometimes it's painful for a period of time, and, you know, there's some pushback when you're trying to set rules or make change in the family. But there is another side, which is, you know, let people go, let them do whatever, and they'll hit the bottom on their own. I tend to think that there's nothing wrong with talking to people and letting them understand what's happening, helping them understand what's happening. That definitely
makes a lot of sense to me. Now, from point of view, I was just, you know, somewhat of a sneaky, wild child. And personally, I don't think anything my mom or dad or anybody in my family could have done differently would have stopped me from doing what I was doing. Because even at a young age, you know, I just, if I wanted something, I made sure I got it. And I didn't care who I hurt in the process. So personally, you know, I don't, and I said this earlier, I not once in my life ever blamed my parents or anybody in my family for the choices that I made growing up. But the advice that I would give is certainly just to get communication down, you know, and just make sure that it's a safe space and you're doing all that you can. And if you have to get outside help, then do so, you know, like family therapists or counseling. There's no shame in that at all. One of the things that I try to do is I talk about my mental health and where I was at when I was a kid, when I go to these schools and I share my story to the students, because a lot of times there's a lot of like people feel discouraged because they don't want to get judged by the counselor or by other people. And it's almost like going to therapy has to be a secret, but you know, mental health is it kind of is very parallel to substance use. I was in a very dark place and I had gone through a lot of trauma at a young age. And that's essentially why I turned to drugs and alcohol for closure, for my mental health. And it was not a positive life choice. And luckily today I have these healthy coping mechanisms. So if something bad does happen, or even when something good happens, I know and I'm confident in myself that I don't have to drink over it. I don't have to use any substance over it. My sister, my oldest sister, so my dad's oldest daughter, got married in September of 2019, and I was able to successfully stay sober that entire ceremony and that entire reception, that whole thing. And even though my maid of honor speech was kind of horrible and awkward, I was sober. And I'm glad, like, I'm able to successfully be an adult and successfully have these emotions, these positive emotions, and not have to resort to drinking. So, yeah, that makes me happy, seeing my personal growth. Question that's rather personal, but is there a moment in time that you can think of where you were just so proud of me within the last 3 years since I got clean?
I'm very proud of all the stuff you do with alumni recovery and, you know, some of the all those things. I've been to a few of them in person, and you're definitely what I consider, you know, what you need to do for your personal recovery and then for, you know, for helping others and that. And I think that's for me been a key to my recovery, is to be involved and doing things. I did things earlier on, and I'm still involved in other people's recoveries. And that helps me understand what's really important. And I see that you're doing the same thing. And I, you know, every time I try to go to them when I can. And, you know, the poster project and the different things. And those moments that really make me understand when you're doing the organizing side of something. I think that's a big step in the right direction. I'm really proud of you for all of that.
Aw, thank you, Daddy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So me and my dad have spoken before. It's been a while, though. I think the last time you and I spoke at a recovery-related event was, I want to say, in 2016. I think it was a while ago. Yeah. And one thing I love speaking with you and like talking about recovery with you, just because it just shows that recovery is possible, you know, and mm-hmm. it shows that everybody is affected in some way, shape, or form.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Recovery, it's definitely something that affects the whole family, in or out.
Yeah, yeah. It's something that people don't realize. It's a disease that doesn't just affect the person diagnosed. It affects everybody, regardless of age and whatnot. So having that family support is just, to me, it makes me feel stronger that I'm able mm-hmm. to not just go to you, but I also have mom, I have my sisters, my family is also growing because I'm engaged. I have my fiance and his family, and mm-hmm. I'm very open with them about my recovery process. Luckily, they've actually never seen me in active addiction. They've only ever known me in a sober lifestyle, and I'd like to keep it that way.
mm-hmm.
You know. But I'm one of the lucky ones. Like, I have a very strong and a very vast support system today. So another question for you would be, you have two other daughters that are younger than me that are still in grade school. So my question is, how are you helping them prevent making similar or the same mistakes and help preventing them from falling into a substance use disorder later on?
I think the main thing is to keep the communication lines open, and we try to talk and be open about everything. And I spend time with them alone, you know, like that kind of thing. And so they can be comfortable talking to me about things, and they're pretty comfortable about everything. And we're just going to keep that up. I still do a lot of travel for work, so it's a little trickier. But we're going to keep it up and keep the lines of communication open so that they feel they can talk about anything. And we talk about what's happening, you know, in their lives and their friends. And occasionally we got to adjust something. And we'll adjust. You know, we had a period where we decided not to use cell phones for a little while. And now we're trying to introduce them back into the family a little bit, and we'll see how it goes. But if we continue to have issues, we may have to, you know, adjust a little bit, you know.
Do you ever censor what they they're able to see, to watch, to hear? Like on the radio, on television.
We've talked about it. We do a lot of streaming and things like that. And we've kind of, we do censor in terms of on the computer work, on the computers. They're not always able to go on the internet the way they used to. And we're trying to adjust periodically to see how we're going to do these things. And it's, you know, we talk about it because there's things happening with some of their friends that are maybe a little more than you know, me or their mother are comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got them in other situations now. I know when you were growing up, you were very involved in 4-H, and that was a very good program, I think, for you in terms of the people you met and what you learned. And we've got them in Scouts, and I think that's going to work out well for them where they're meeting other children their age and younger, and they're getting the opportunity to be leaders instead of just followers. So I think that's important for them to learn how to do that.
Yeah. I know with my relationship with my little sisters, I'm kind of like the cool big sister, because I'm not that much older than them, but I'm still kind of old. And I'm still, I know a lot of like the social media trends that they refer to, and like the celebrities and all that gossip.
Uh-huh.
So I have that connection with them, but as a father, like an older, a different generation, how do you feel that social media and you know, the media in general, how do you feel that has a influence on glamorizing drugs and alcohol to the younger generation?
I think it has an influence on them, and you have to, I have to watch it. I know the lyrics of just the music is disturbing sometimes, and I'm sure I sound like my dad did when I was his age, your age, or their age. But it's, once again, you have to talk about it and communicate and get into things that are, you know, service oriented, whether it's church or Scouts or 4-H or something that is, you know, a community program of people who are trying to improve lives and learn something instead of just, you know, hide in a room and take drugs, you know. It's just a matter, we just have to talk on a regular basis about it.
A lot, especially in Bergen County, when I was growing up, where that there would be some parents that would chaperone parties and think that it was okay to host these underage drinking parties under their roof because they were chaperoning. As a father and also as a person in recovery, what's your opinion on that?
I think that's illegal.
Well, yeah, it's illegal now, but
so that's,
you know,
not something I'm going to participate in. It's just not a no. I mean, you know, I'm old, and I remember, you know, back in the day, people would give wine to children, type of thing. And some cultures, that's how people grew up. I'm not sure that now we know, you know, that's probably not the best thing on a daily basis for children, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's certainly not a good idea to glamorize the lifestyle of getting drunk or, you know, whatever, every weekend, you know? And there's quite a bit of that going on.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I know for me, like, as kids, we didn't see a problem with it. I remember being like 16 years old and going to parties with other 16-year-olds, and we just didn't see an issue because it was in the movies that we would watch from my generation, like American Pie, Band Camp, you know, Scary Movie. Those are the movies that I grew up with and the influence that I had. And I feel like, you know, that had a huge, a heavy, heavy influence on like the lifestyle choices that a lot of myself and made. And today, looking on, you know, looking at all these social media trends and whatnot, I'm seeing like similarities, but definitely like a difference. I feel like the kids nowadays are more educated or like at least aware of the dangers that can happen. And there's more resources out there available to them. Like we've definitely come like as a society a very long way. We have the Trevor Project, which is an amazing hotline for LGBTQ youth, which is 24/7. We have the crisis text hotline where you can 741 and it's a 24/7, 365 days a year hotline, and you don't even have to call them. You can text them, you know, so the resources alone have changed, and it's amazing. I think that this generation, that the kids that are growing up now are extremely lucky to have what they have, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of options.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, anyway, it's about 7:45. I'm just going to thank my dad for coming on and thank you, Hercules, again for having us and for inviting Alumni in Recovery to speak on your podcast. It's truly an honor to be able to get that discussion going and hopefully, you know, some parents were able to hop on and to listen and maybe even some kids and somebody can hear the discussion and it'll spark a discussion in their home at their dinner table tonight or tomorrow or sometime in the future, you know?
Well,
so one thing
you.
I love
well,
about...
Being on, you're awesome, and you're very open, and that alone will help a lot of people who don't have that possibility in their life or feel that they don't. And I think Alumni in Recovery does great work in the community, and everybody I've met so far has been very remarkable.
Yeah, it's definitely a great networking resource for the community, you know.
So thank you so very much for being on then. Do you have anything you'd like to add in closing?
Just that Alumni in Recovery has a lot of upcoming events that are happening. We have Recovery Day, which is September 11th at the Tallman Pool Club in New York. And then we also have... October 17th, we have another in-person recovery walk called Pause for Recovery. And you can find all this information on our website, www.alumniinrecovery.org. We also could definitely benefit from having more faces and new faces to help volunteer and speak and put a face on recovery, you know, because speaking about addiction is one step towards preventative action.
Yep.
Okay, thank you so very much, and thanks to everybody who listened in, whether you listened in online as we were speaking or whether you're going to join us later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thank you again so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Okay, and we're going to close today with, I guess, let me pick something I'm not familiar with here. We will Bridget of the Sacred Waters. I've never heard that one.